98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Doug and Wolf's Rush Hour Reboot. Rush Hour Reboot. Getting you up to speed on everything happening in sports this morning. Brought to you by 72 Sold. Get the price for your home at 72sold.com.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
Right, it's there, time right. for the Rush Hour Reboot. But I got to tell you, first and foremost, Bear, why didn't you blow Dave Pasch's head off with Loverboy? What just happened? Come on.
Watch it. There it is, Maloney. Go ahead and Paul Stahl, flash number three right there. Hour number three, Bear in command and control. Gonna get a three. There it is, ladies and gentlemen. Hour number three on the Doug and Wolf Show. Studio White, reported for duty. Hour number three on the Doug and Wolf Show. Savages in the morning on a Cowbell Friday. Punch it.
You know, I admit, normally it's a negative to say it's only 8 o'clock, but I actually mean that it's a positive. I mean, James Betcher, Dave Pasch, Marvin Lewis, Steve Keim. We just crammed a lot into 2 hours here.
And then
I can't believe it's only 8 o'clock.
Then the longtime Oregon D.C. Nick Aliotti.
Oh, I should have known.
I can't wait to talk to you.
Coach,
we're gonna have Coach Aliotti on coming up at 9:30, and we'll ask him the question: what happened in that Auburn game? Maloney wants to know.
That's and not only that, did you wear Jordache jeans, Coach?
No, we're not.
Come on.
We're actually not asking either of those questions. Okay. All right, go ahead and repunch it, Bear. Maloney takes over for your Rush Hour Reboot. What you got?
So college football is back for the Pac-12 as the conference's 2020 football season will be commencing on November 6th. So what was ASU head coach Herm Edwards' reaction? Here's ASU vice president for university athletics and athletics director Ray Anderson last night with the presser.
In terms of football, Gene Boyd had the pleasure of notifying Herm, and I'm sure he's still jumping up and down in his office somewhere.
Couldn't remember if he was on the Maroon Monsoon or the Pac-12 press conference, so he was on the Pac-12 press conference, though.
Okay.
What are your thoughts with that?
This is fantastic, man. This is just great. I'm so glad they're going to play a season in the fall, of course, and I have to get over the amount of time it's going to take to prepare some young kid to play in a football game and accept the fact that it's going to take 6 weeks and get over that and just be happy with the fact they're actually going to play football. It does annoy me. It does bother me that they didn't say right from the beginning, hey, listen, we don't know what we're going to do yet. They said, that's it. They called it off. Forget about it. We're not going to play in the fall. We'll play maybe in the spring. And then suddenly you had a bunch of people out there that didn't prepare for actually playing in a season this year. And now all of a sudden they're going to. That's the one fault I find in all of this.
So, Doug, my question for you, do you think a 7-0 Pac-12 champ gets into the college football playoff?
No, I don't. And you know who I blame? Not the team. I blame Larry Scott totally. And it's even part of Wolf's point. What you have to understand if you're a fan, it's easy to bury your head in the sand and just go, hey, can you just be happy we're playing? But think about the national perception. And if you don't think that matters, guess what determines whether or not you get into playoffs? It's the national perception. The national perception is the Pac-12 is a joke, and this is one of the reasons why. 1 minute you're not playing, the next minute you are. Okay, when you weren't playing, guess what? The rest of the nation laughed at you and didn't care that you weren't playing. And that's national perception that you don't matter. And guess what was the number one reason why you hired Larry Scott? Was to change the national perception, and he's failed at it. If you want to have a 7-0 team, like imagine the SEC, the Big Ten, anybody else. Somebody goes 7-0 in their conferences, it's guaranteed they get into the playoff. In the Pac-12,
okay, my bad that I asked this question.
I don't think so.
It's my bad. My bad.
Doug had a little passion there.
The Cardinals guys are gearing up for the Lions on Sunday at State Farm Stadium.
What's your point, Mel?
Well, 2-0 versus 0-2. Cards GM Steve Keim told you guys when he joined Doug and Wolf this morning.
I think that's it. It is the old adage of one game at a time. And, you know, there's certainly a lot of things that we need to work on. And, you know, even though we are 2-0, we do lead the league in penalties. So when you look at our play on offense, you want to eliminate the negative yards, which is continues to be an issue for us, as well as the penalties in all three phases. So once we clean that those areas up, I feel really good about this football team. I love the character and the men in our locker room. So really excited about where we are.
Do you think an 0-2 team can be dangerous?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. They can be dangerous, especially when you have Matthew Stafford as their quarterback. You have offensive weapons. They've underachieved so far offensively. Now you're going to get back your wide receiver one, Kenny Golladay. You're going to get him back. I don't know how many reps he's going to play. I don't. But if he's 100%, he's a professional athlete, for the crying out loud. He's been staying in shape. So, to me, he's going to get the opportunity to play on a desperate 0-2 team. So, yeah, I think the Lions are very dangerous because this could be a shootout game.
I'm going to trust the leadership for once. This is a big-time letdown game, and we've been let down so many times by teams we believe in letdown games. But I've heard what I want to hear. I think they've got the leadership to be able to fight through it.
The praise for Kyler Murray continued yesterday, this time from a future Hall of Famer and his current teammate, Larry Fitzgerald.
He puts defenders in a really, really tough position because you have to be cautious. You don't want to get a 15-yard penalty if he slides, but then you slack off a little bit. I mean, he'll run right past you, and, you know, he's so unique in that regard. And, you know, he's dynamic, and, you know, I think the most dynamic player in the National Football League right now.
So when you guys had Steve Keim on, he said the one thing that has stood out about Kyler Murray from day one was his competitiveness.
Mm-hmm.
What has stood out to you about Kyler Murray from day one?
The fact that he's not 5'8", he's 5'10"
and
an
5'9" and a half. He's not 5'10". No,
I just totally wrote Kyler Murray off when he was at Oklahoma. I had guys that I know, I love and respect, that have told me face-to-face, I stood next to the guy. And Wolf, he's not over 5'9". There's no way he's over 5'9". He's 5'8 and a half. I had people telling me that. And there was like just watching me. It was like, oh, that's incredible. Oh, what an incredible play right there. Oh, that's nice. You know what? 5'8 and a half at some point in time is not going to appear in the National Football League at the quarterback position. It's not, ladies and gentlemen. Ron Wolfley reporting. The moment he actually stepped on the scale and weighed 207 pounds and measured 5'10 and an eighth, everything changed. Did it not, Russell Wilson?
My number one is just how well and how poorly both he handled the losing. That he's never lost more in his life than he did last year, and it didn't change him, but he hated it as bad as you thought he would. And that he is all football. I mean, a guy that's good enough to be a top 10 pick in Major League Baseball draft is still all about football and all about getting better. That's impressive. I think that's the most impressive thing to me about Kyler Murray is just how much – you can say you're a competitor, but how much do you really care? Every day. You know, prove it every day, Wolf. Every
day. Prove it.
Coming up next – we react to the other things Steve Keim had to say, especially about what we're looking at for the next 3 weeks. That's next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
State of being.
Sunday. Detroit and their 32nd ranked rushing defense comes to State Farm Stadium. What are the Cardinals going to be able to do? Are they going to pound it? Is it the same game plan as the first 2 weeks of the season in which it's doing a lot of passing in the first half, pounding it in the second half? There's a lot of the game plan to talk about, but I don't think the game, you know, game plans are important, Wolf. I don't think the game plan is nearly as important as the mental plan. Did the Arizona Cardinals attack the process on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and today to get ready to face Detroit? Or did they look and see that 32nd-ranked rush defense and say, man, these guys aren't good?
No.
Did they watch Mitchell Trubisky light them up in the fourth quarter and say, man, these guys aren't good? Did anything break down during the week because they noticed these guys aren't good? Because if they did, imagine trying to justify being 2-1 after playing that team.
You know, of everything you just said right there, Douglas, the one thing I continue to come back to is, will Cliff Kingsbury change his game plan? In the first 2 weeks, we saw him come out, and they established the fact, we're going to throw the ball. I'm telling you right now, we don't care if you're the San Francisco 49ers and the number one pass defense in the National Football League in 2019. We don't care. We're going to throw the ball. We don't care you have Nick Bosa. We don't care you've got this great pass rush. We're going to throw the ball right here. And then, of course, they did the exact same thing, for the most part, I would say, against Washington, except they took more shots down the field against Washington. That was the one adjustment, I thought, from the first week. And then they both, in both those games, ran the ball a little bit more in that second half. I'm wondering if this is the week, and we were talking about this yesterday, but I'm wondering if this is the week where they come out and say, you know what, we're going to establish the fact, we're going to run the ball on you guys because you guys are so bad in regard to stopping the run. We're going to establish that right now. It's going to be interesting to see what Cliff does.
I'd certainly like to see that. And I listen, you got to do what the other team gives you. And that's really what I look at in the first 2 weeks. As the game plan was designed for both teams, Washington wasn't nearly as good in the back end as San Francisco is all throughout their defense, so it made sense. So now, just like we've always complimented Cliff Kingsbury for making adjustments, especially at the beginning. Remember, if you didn't hear it today, we had a great conversation with James Betcher, and he is formerly the Cardinals defensive coordinator, but he talked about, as the Giants defensive coordinator, the Cardinals team they prepared for at the beginning, and he said college offense. He didn't say air raid or run and shoot, but it was always 4-wide. That's all we saw. But we played them in week 7, and the team we saw was so much more complex in the run game and not running all college stuff. So we've complimented Cliff Kingsbury forever on his adjustments, kind of the things that Keyshawn Johnson doesn't see. What is he going to look at now when Detroit is presenting everything in his face to say, Kenyon Drake, Kenyon Drake, Kenyon Drake? Is he going to follow what exactly the film is telling him to do?
Yeah, that's a great point, honestly. Is he going to do that? I got distracted by your rip on Key right there. I love Key, ladies and gentlemen, but honestly, I do wonder some of the stuff he says. I do wonder what he's doing and if he's actually watched any games. But remember this. Go back to last year of Matt Patricia and what he did. I wonder how he views last year's game against Kyler Murray. Mm-hmm. He was talking earlier, Douglas, right? Earlier this week, we actually played some cuts on Matt Patricia actually talking about how much better he sees Kyler Murray this year as opposed to what he did last year. How much better he's running the ball, better decisions that he's making, right? The way that he's matured and developed, of course. I just wonder how much of that last year is going to carry over to this year's game. How much of the game plan? Think back to that game right there. They dropped 8 a lot of the time. They dropped 8 and rushed 3. Against Kyler Murray a lot of the time. Now, I realize you had a lot of 10 personnel out there. 4 wides, basically. Means one running back, no tight ends, 4 wide receivers out on the field. Had a lot of that in that first game in particular. But it was working. It worked for 3 quarters for the most part. And they were not coming after Kyler Murray. As a matter of fact, after the preseason, I was sure teams were going to blitz Kyler Murray based on what the Raiders did to him in the preseason and the way they went after him and what a copycat league it is, and the fact that you also had Kyler Murray, who was a rookie, of course you're going to go after him. You're going to see if the kid's going to be able to handle it. They really didn't. They didn't bring pressure a lot. They dropped and played coverage. I wonder if that strategy, they played zone cover. And I'm wondering if that's going to change, because Matt Patricia does like to play man cover. What is he going to do to try to stop Kyler Murray? That's question one I have.
Then, you know, one thing you're wondering, okay, if they're dropping back, maybe the defense gets on their heels a little bit. They don't read their keys. You take the 32nd best rush defense, and you might make it even less aggressive and be able to try to run the football. So that would mean you'd like to see a lot of Max Williams out there as a great run-blocking tight end. You asked Steve Keim, when do you expect Max back? He gave you the one answer, the IR answer, but then he actually said, you know what, maybe we didn't take too far of a step down.
Well, he went on IR, and we expect Max back you know, some point in the middle of the season. I thought actually this past game, Darryl Daniels did a really nice job in the run game blocking. We know Dan Arnold can be a mismatch in the passing game, but he's another guy that's hard to replace, again, because of his leadership. He's extremely smart football player. He understands the game, and he's great in the locker room. So we'll certainly welcome him back, you know, as soon as he can get healthy.
I've talked a lot about this, but I really do believe it's important right here. Just the fact that Steve pointed out that Darryl Daniels actually did block well, right? I think that's a big deal. It is, but he's not Max Williams to me. Mm-hmm. When you have Max Williams, the number one personnel group for the Arizona Cardinals is 11 personnel, which is three wide receivers, one back, one tight end. When you have him in there in rundown situation, first and 10, second and 1-6, you've got balance to me. You've got ultimate balance. And the reason being is because of the three wide receivers on the field, that's going to scare a defensive coordinator. You're going to get a lot of two safety high looks when those three receivers are on the field together. And that means you can run the ball. That means you can run it with Kenyon Drake in the backfield or Chase Edmonds in the backfield with Max Williams, who's an excellent blocker at the point of attack. Now all of a sudden you're probably going to have 6-on-6 in a rundown situation to be able to run it and run it effectively. To me, that balance that he brings in rundown situations is critical. And we're going to miss him. But I wonder if, in fact, we're going to see the offense change just a little bit, continue to change a little bit more than what we've seen in the past. And maybe it's one of the reasons why running the ball includes a lot of deception from Cliff Kingsbury so far, as opposed to flat-out destruction.
We want to give you a brand-new $700 barbecue grill and a custom Arizona Sports cornhole set. How cool would that be? Text GATE to 620-620 right now to be part of the Arizona Sports virtual tailgate with your favorite hosts and special NFL guests. We're giving away one barbecue grill and cornhole set every weekday at 5 o'clock. Text GATE to 620-620 for your chance to be a winner. The Arizona Sports virtual tailgate is presented by Four Peaks. Coming up next, if the Pac-12 season falls in a forest, does anybody hear it? That's next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. So it's really nice this morning, if you didn't get a chance to hear it, to be able to sit back with Marvin Lewis and talk to the Sun Devils defensive coordinator and getting ready for the season and just his excitement and
just anxious to figure it out who we're going to play and so forth. And but we are, our players will be very excited. They've been very patient through this whole process, as we've all had to be.
Man, do I love that guy. Just the fact we had the opportunity to speak with him. He's a legend. We are the Wu Fang Clan, Bay Sedonians in the Wolf League compound. We look at Marvin Lewis, we see legend. I kid you not, he's that well-respected and regarded in my family. Craig, I know, is a huge fan. I mean, here he is, Craig, who played for the Steelers for 10 years. 10 years, right? And has been the color analyst up there, sideline non-combatant is what he calls himself. Mm-hmm. But he's been the sideline analyst up there for another 24 years. Do you think he's seen Marvin Lewis? Do you think he's seen a lot of the Bengals teams? Of course he has. And just the way he's revered and respected, Basinonians, and it's because of the man that he is and the coach that he is.
I think he spent, this is off the top of my head, Wolf, 12 years as an AFC North assistant with the Steelers and Ravens. in my opinion, was the head coach of the Ravens team that won the Super Bowl, because he had a lot more to do with it than Brian Billick did. And then was the, gosh, I think it was 16 years he's the head coach of the Bengals, something like that.
Oh, just incredible.
So he's very knowledgeable man, saw a lot. He says they're jacked up. Pac-12 supposed to get started in November. No schedule as out as of yet. But I think the big story here again is just Larry Scott and his mismanagement of this thing, unless it's more of a commissioner or a school presidents and athletic directors, and he's just a shill for all of them. Say, hey, whatever you want, I'll go out there and take the bullets. But if he's really a major decision maker, I just don't like what he's done and how he's handled this. This is what he said yesterday in the press conference.
Student athletes' desire has had a lot to do with this, which was communicated to us. They want as meaningful a season as possible. We know we're starting later than some, but you know, having as meaningful an opportunity as possible and being able to play that seventh game before bowl season was important to our coaches and student athletes.
So when you say, you know, this, our student athletes really pushed us towards this, I don't want to be a hypocrite, because far too often in our society, somebody says something and then we go, you, well, then you really think this, you know, and we twist their words around. And I'm about to do that, so I'm a little nervous here, I admit. But it's Larry Scott, so I feel justified in it, in that, Larry, are you saying that student-athletes didn't care before? And so now that they're really pushing you, you're going to do it. If it's about the health and safety of the players, why are you starting without a vaccine? That makes no sense. If you're saying, well, we're okay about all the testing and we know that you're not going to have it, we've had multiple situations where there have been false positives and false negatives.
Yeah.
Which means if you're so worried about myocarditis, which is specifically why you said we weren't playing before.
Yeah.
Now it's okay, even though we could have a false positive or a false negative. To me, you've mismanaged this thing so bad all along. While the SEC has had the attitude, we're going to have daily testing from the beginning, or we're not going to do it. We're going to spend that kind of money. I have no problem with a college conference saying, we don't have the money for daily testing, and therefore we're not going to play. That is protecting the student athlete. That is being the adult in the room. And there's nothing wrong with saying, you know what? We're going to spend this money because football means that much to us. We're going to have daily testing, and we're going to think that's going to be the best way to have a healthy season, and we're going to explain the risks to the players and the coaches, and we're going to give them the right to opt out. That's the way you handle it. And it seems like the Pac-12 is just chasing their tail. And why does it matter? Because, again, you've presented to the national media and to a national fan base that you don't matter, that football doesn't matter. And when you do that, guess what happens when it's time for college football playoff committees to vote on who are the best teams? Mm. They look at you in the Pac-12 and say, you don't matter.
Douglas, what do you think of the 7-game schedule? What do you think of that?
I thought, number one, it's not enough unless Oregon just dominates. Oregon is the one team that if they go 7-0 and they dominate in their 7 games, they might be around for the college football playoff, but I still don't think so. You already have a bad reputation. And if you already have a bad reputation as a conference, if your conference champion hasn't been taken seriously in years anyway, now you come in with a lesser schedule. I don't know how anyone's going to look at you and say you belong in the college football playoff.
See, the one thing I don't like is just the fact that why in the world did they just say we're canceling, we're done. We're canceling the fall sports season. That's what we're doing. Mm-hmm. We're wiping it out. We're canceling it. They should have used different terminology, I think, because I think it's one of the reasons why it's taken this long to get back.
You're right.
I do. They should have said we're postponing it. We don't know. We're just postponing it indefinitely. Maybe the spring of 2021, which, honestly, when you think about that, you had to you had to laugh out loud, ladies and gentlemen, when you heard it. Because guess what? What kind of football was that truly going to be in the Pac-12 if you were going to play in the spring 2021? It's not only about the fact, well, listen, we're worried about player safety, and then, of course, you're going to play as many games as you would be playing within a certain amount of spring and fall, and that would be a problem, of course, from a scheduling standpoint. You could actually look somebody in the face and say, we're worried about player safety, if that's what you were going to do. But more importantly, what kind of football was it going to be anyways? Because all the football players that were going to be drafted
your best athletes.
Into the NFL, your best players, they weren't going to play.
Yeah.
They were not going to play. So why in the world would you just say, that's it, we're done for the fall, it's over? You jumped the gun, and you knew it, and it was because of the myocarditis. Why not come back and say, we were wrong? Why would Doug Lease, did he do that?
No, not at all.
I haven't read anything where they addressed the myocarditis question, and that's my problem.
That's
what gets me upset. Why not just come back and say, you know what, we got information that was wrong. And
the Oregon State president said the reason what they have that the SEC and other conferences don't have are facts.
Yes.
I mean, think about how strong it is.
Right.
He basically said, we're smarter than them, but now all of a sudden you're playing. So did you cure myocarditis?
Exactly right.
Are you 100% guaranteeing there are zero Pac-12 players that will play a game this year with COVID-19 that could affect their heart?
So why not just come forward and say, listen, we jumped the gun on this thing because we got some bad information.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good, I mean, honestly, it's a good reason. Hey, listen, we got some bad information with myocarditis and what it could possibly do to our young people. So we were making the decision for them. Why not just come out and say, we made a mistake, we got bad information?
Yep. And you asked a great question this morning to Dave Pasch, and we were all shocked by you engaged in asking a good question. And if you ever miss any of the Doug and Wolf conversations, just be a subscriber to the Doug and Wolf podcast, and it comes up right to your phone. But you asked about a leadership in college football and having a commissioner or having a one guy that's in charge of football. And the problem, it's a great idea, but the problem is if you're the SEC, wait, we make more money than all of you. You all react to what we do anyway. Why should we give up any of our power?
Because it's only going to get better. That's why.
I would hope so.
It's only going to get better and bigger. They need the rest of the conferences. They need the rest of the country to care about college football the way they care about college football. They need it. If they want the big the buku money and big-time cash, they need the other four power conferences.
I'm at the point now after Larry Scott to say the other three power conferences.
Well,
I don't think the Pac-12 is a power conference.
It will rise again.
Coming up next, what are the four things we're going to watch when we stare down Cardinals, Lions? It's coming up on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
It's Four Down Territory with Doug and Wolf.
Here's how Four Down Territory works. Wolf is in the Action Community Studios. Paul and I are on opposite ends of the earth, east side, west side. Maloney comes up with the topic, and then we address it, but not in a ranking list broadcasting way, because we get to choose what are the four things based on which down during a series we think is the most important. You tweet us your opinions on what it is that you think are the four big things for this at DougAndWolf98.7. Here's your question. What are the four things you are staring down the most when you'll be watching Cards Lions?
First down.
My first down is a question to Vance Joseph. Will Pat P. travel? It's really simple to me. They don't have that great of an offense. It's not disastrous, but it's not that great. And if Galladay is all that in the bag of chips or their primary weapon, why not just say you're playing another game without Galladay, two because of a hamstring, and three because Pat P. is shutting him down? I say let Pat P. eat.
Pat P. will travel. Yeah, that'd be my expectation. Here's what I'm watching. Speaking of Vance Joseph, will the Cardinals defense pick up where they left off? And in the words of the defensive coordinator at the end of the Washington game, quote, we stop tackling. So if I'm the Lions, I run Adrian Peterson out there and I say, who wants him? Are you guys willing to take on Adrian Peterson? Because he is a grown man with a crushing handshake, and he'll crush you in the open field if you're not ready to bring it. So you know what? If I'm the Lions, go out there and run it and see if the Cardinals are willing to actually stick their nose in there.
All right, Basinonians, my first down to four down territory has got to be, what will the mighty Kyler Murray do this week? The entire nation has been talking about the mighty and how he's been playing. Anecdotally enough, the one play they continue to show was a play that didn't count because of a holding call against Dan Arnold. The Lions are not a good tackling team. And if Kyler Murray chooses to run, he could lay something down on tape that we'll all be watching for another week. What will Kyler Murray do? That's my first down.
Second down.
Run, Cliff, run. You said, what is Kyler going to do? I'm looking at Kenyon Drake, Kenyon, Kyler, Cliff. I'm looking at these three guys and saying, that defense is terrible at stopping the run. The only reason why they're ranked 32nd is because there aren't more teams left for them to rank below. This is a terrible rush defense. Cliff Kingsbury, your job is to exploit it and exploit it constantly, and I would be in my O-line's face all week long. The first 2 weeks were about going horizontal. O-line, it's about you going vertical. You heard about the vertical pass game? This game is the vertical run game. And challenge this O-line to knock people on their butt and dominate. I want 6.5 yards a carry. This rush defense is so bad. Exploit it.
Before and after. I want to see the difference this year compared to last year when it comes to covering T.J. Hockenson.
Oh.
A year ago, he had 6 for 131. He had the chunk throw touchdown. He had another 39-yard reception. He was open all game long, and guess what? It was a trend we saw all season long, the inability and epic failure to cover the tight end. Devondre Campbell, we're looking at you, and man, we want to believe and be convinced that that's not going to be a problem because it hasn't been so far. Now go out and prove it against T.J. Hockenson.
Okay, Basinonians, my second down, a four down territory has got to be, will the Lions defense stop Kyler Murray? Yeah, that's right. Here we go. Do you see a trend here? What will Matt Patricia do? Will he blitz the Cards, which is 6 or more, bring more junk than he did a year ago? Will he put a spy on Kyler Murray? Will he bring pressure, which is 5, and try to collapse the pocket around him, telling his rushers to bull rush? How will Matt Patricia try to mitigate Kyler Murray and his productivity? That's my second down.
Third down.
Played well. You know, been involved in a TE twist in order to help a teammate get a sack. But for me, my third down, this is the game where Chandler Jones dominates. This is the game where you're going up against the standard old drop-back quarterback in a Matthew Stafford. Chandler Jones has a 3-sack game. He takes over. The rest of the country will be talking about Kyler Murray. We're going to be talking about Chandler Jones after this game.
There's a rookie on the field drafted higher than Isaiah Simmons. His name is Jeff Okuda. Jeff Okuda, the number 3 pick overall. Mr. Young Okuda. Guess what? You're going to get a highly motivated DeAndre Hopkins.
Oh.
Welcome to the NFL. Because D-Hop's coming off a game where he had a drop. Oh, he actually dropped the football.
Yes,
he didn't do that the entirety of 2018. And there was a mental mistake as well, an ME, when he ran the wrong route and caused an interception. You thought D-Hop went off in game one? Just wait to what he does against the rookie Jeff Okuda on Sunday.
Okay, people of the Sun, my third down, a four down territory has got to be, will Pat P shadow Kenny Golladay? Yes,
oh, that's a good one.
That's a good one. Golladay, of course, is coming off a 2-week stint in which he's had a bad hamstring. Oh, the bad moon over my hammy. He's missed time, but he's an integral piece to what the Lions do. Will Vance Joseph put Pat P over him when he's on the field, or will he make Golladay prove he's healthy and capable of playing over 50% of the snaps before committing Pat P to the shadow? We shall see, but that is my third down to four down territory.
Fourth down.
Special in honor of fourth down, being the special teams down. I'm going to ask the question, can special teams continue to slay the ghost of Amos Jones? As block a punt in week one, recover a fumble and punt cover in week two. What are you going to do in week three? You've been a huge positive. By the way, their punter averages something like 52 yards a punt. So there's a challenge here. Yes, I'm calling you out, John Bloom. 52 yards a punt for Detroit. So special teams for the Arizona Cardinals. Make it a third straight week with a big play.
Doug, just save the punting for John Bloom's podcast, okay? All right, that's what we need.
Bloomer.
The punting podcast.
The fourth down we're looking at with the Lions, and it's real easy if you're the Cardinals. Take a lead. The Lions will unravel. They will implode. Yeah. They've lost 11 straight games. Their last win was in last October. They're the Lions. That's not even the worst skid in recent history, as they dropped 19 in a row from 2007 to 2009. They're under Matt Patricia. They have lost 11 times after leading in the fourth quarter. So even if you don't take a lead, you're still good, because they'll blow it in the fourth quarter. Just remove any thought and confidence the Lions are going to win, because they haven't won anything since Bobby Lane in the late 50s.
Okay, my brothers, fourth down. That's right, my fourth down, a four-down territory, will be the Cardinals. And whether or not they're going to try to run the ball earlier against the Lions front six or front seven. The last 2 weeks, we've seen the Cardinals come out and throw the ball early in games. Week two saw them take more shots down the field, and that was clearly by design. What will they do in week three? The Lions' rush defense is the worst in the National Football League, and Kenyon Drake needs that first breakout game of 2020 to get rolling. This would be a good week for him to start.
Fair. Hit the close.
Man, you ain't ever got to worry about Wolf's competitiveness. I'll take him in the street fight any day.
Doug, that's the second time this week it's blown up in your face. You tried to rip me with Dave Pasch, and then you tried to earhole Wolf with Steve Keim. You know, it's just not working out, Doug.
Keim was on his toes today, I got to tell you.
I
got to tell you about that. Yeah. He did get me. Speaking of Steve Keim, just by the way, I do want to compliment Wolf. That was your best four-down territory ever.
Oh, stop it, please.
You should really think long and hard about continually using mine and repurpose
them. Doug Lease, there are people that are standing outside this door. They wait for me to finish my four-down territory before they congratulate me.
I see. You got a high-five train. Coming up next, how competitive is Kyler Murray? Paul just mentioned Steve Keim having something to say about Wolf. Guess what he said about his own quarterback.
I'll be right out.
That's next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Plagiarize.